Two gentlemen live in a neighborhood, one Jewish, one not, and the non-Jewish fellow keeps getting robbed. Comes to his neighbor, Jewish fellow, and says, I've been robbed 6 times this year, and you not at all. The Jewish fellow thinks about it. He says, well, it's got to be, I have a mezuzah. You don't. Maybe that's the issue. He says, can you get me a mezuzah? It's a little inappropriate, but he does get him a mezuzah. Puts it up, comes back another couple months later, says, you know, I haven't been robbed at all, but I'm giving you the mezuzah back. And the guy says, why? You haven't been robbed. He says, well, B'nai B'rith comes, Federation comes. That was Rabbi Wilhelm told that joke. I don't know if I gave him credit. I thought that was great. Not exactly material to this sermon, but I'm going to make it work, because I really wanted to tell that joke so I could start getting it in my system. Pardon?
No good deeds go unpunished.
Exactly. No, but there is a concept that I want to share called Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, that we are each, every Jewish and Israelite person is responsible for each other. The literal meaning is we are all sort of enmeshed among each other. So this sense of mutual responsibility is what I want to talk about. There are, and in contrast to that, there is an alternate principle or a kind of flip side, the converse principle, Al tifrosh min hatzibur. Don't separate yourself from the community. So that principle, I think, is raised in this week's parasha when the armies are called to war. We're told, would you call your armies to war? You must gather men of eligible age, men of fighting age, 20 years and up, and sanction them, prepare them for the mustering. And what you say, among other things, are you afraid? Go home. Have you built a house yet, not dedicated it yet? So sort of come into it, made it your own. Do you have a vineyard that you've planted and yet have not harvested? Go home. Take care of your vineyard. Did you just get married or betrothed but have not yet consummated that marriage and lived with your wife? Go home. Attend to that first. Which I wonder if that would have been or could have been done in practice, because I can imagine a lot of people saying, yep, done. I'm out of here.
It didn't work with my draft board.
No, it did not, yeah. Exactly. I had bone spurs. So many bone spurs. Bone spurs and vineyards. So what I think our sages pick up on is this is really a prime and difficult example of allowing someone to tifrosh min hatzibur, to separate him or himself from the community. And that creates a dangerous precedent and also allows to impugn the character of that person, because we assume, what a coward. No, he is not supporting us in our national venture of serving the country to defend it from its enemies and to protect its rights and lands. So our sages in Talmud suggest that those four categories, fear, the house, the vineyard, the marriage, allow a gentleness as we look at this person pulling himself from the community. You might have said, oh, he must be a coward, but instead you might go away and say, his grapes are probably due. You know, he must have gotten married, or he must have a house he hasn't finished building. It allows sort of someone to save face and not to reveal himself as one who might part from the community. So that's the tension. There's the principle, al tifrosh min hatzibur, don't separate yourself from the community, and the flip side of that coin being, kol Yisrael arevim zeh lazeh, we are each mutually responsible. And I think one can, in this day and age, expand that beyond the Israelite borders, but to all Jews, all persons, that we have a responsibility to our community, to our nation, to our world. As the Talmud notes, you can't be in a boat, and I'm on the left and you're on the right, and I say I'm going to drill on my side, because it's my side. Why do you care? That's not how life works. So this is one of those sermons where I'm writing and thinking and I'm circling around ideas, and I didn't quite know what I was meaning, what the essence of this was until this morning, and I reflected on it. And I want to tell you a couple of stories about the week. So probably Wednesday, Laura, I don't want to put too many people on the spot, so I'll conceal some identities in these stories, calls me and says, Bunny Scherzer Brooks, whose real name is Bernice. Bernice, I never heard her called that, is actively dying. She was a transplant from New Orleans after Katrina. I think she may have gone to Texas for a bit and come here, settled here. By a Jewish agency or just coincidentally? Coincidentally. A well-respected graphic artist in her home community, aging, with one child whom she's not close, not estranged, but not nearby, for sure. So she's actively dying. Laura was maintaining vigil. I went to visit her in West Hills, at the West Hills Rehab. And I was just so impressed by what Laura was doing that I realized that it really isn't okay for a Jewish person to die alone. For someone who, through no fault of her own, wasn't exactly part of her community, by the time she arrived here, she was too aged to really integrate. So I called Peggy and Rick, and I said, we need to attend to her. And the response I got was better than my dreams. Some people have been with her for hours at a time. Some people have come to play music with her, to sing with her, to hold her hand. She may, God forbid, die alone, but she won't be dying alone. This is what Scott notices, has pointed out to me, is called chesed shel emet. We have a fund for this. The supporting those who might die, chesed shel emet, the true grace, the true generosity. Because supporting a dead or dying person will never return to you, will never redound to you with reward. You will never be acknowledged. You will never get paid back. We call that chesed shel emet, the real true grace. And I've seen it quite a bit this week, not only with Miss Brooks, but also with some ailing members of our congregation who are attended constantly by their loved ones, by their community members, by their friends. It's quite beautiful. So the last several verses of this parasha, and the rest of my sermon will just be about that last section, are called the Egla Arufa, the broken-necked calf, the broken-necked heifer. And we know that if a dead body, and typically a manslaughter, is unattended and it's found somewhere between two communities, and neither community can attest that that person falls within their domain, the elders of each community come out, gather together with a heifer of a certain age, and break its neck. It's not clear if they decapitate it or just crack the neck, as a means of disavowing the guilt, so to speak. We are sorry that this happened, but we have no direct evidence of how this person died. And there's not even a sense that it was necessarily murder or foul play. It could have been stumbling in a ravine, sort of the image I have in mind. And the declaration that they make is, our hands did not spill this blood, and our eyes did not see. And the intimation is that this was some sort of failure of hospitality. So we call that a met mitzvah, a dead person, a corpse, who is enjoined upon us as a mitzvah. We find a dead person whom we must attend to, and through no desire of our own, through no familial or fidelity connection. Ms. Brooks is not dead, and she will likely not be buried here, but we will be doing Chevra Kedisha for her. We will attend to her when her time comes, when the angel of death comes to collect her. We will attend her as a met mitzvah. That is the mitzvah that we are permitted to do this week. And I recommend that you connect with Peggy or Rick, who are coordinating sort of schedules. If this is a mitzvah you're able to do, it's quite unique. Not very unique, but it certainly is unique to attend to someone who has no one to attend to them. And parenthetically, this is one of the few dead bodies, the only, I think, dead body that a high priest can be in contact with. So likewise, during this week, a gentleman who is a priest, a Kohen by lineage, came to visit Ms. Brooks, and another congregant was there, someone who is less knowledgeable or less experienced in Judaism, and she noted to the Kohen, said, you shouldn't be here. You're a Kohen. This person dies, you'll be rendered impure. Not appropriate for you to be here, she said to him. In Israeli hospitals, they have like a Kohen light. If there's a deceased person in the building, you the Kohanim exit. And what that says to me, I just learned of this morning, I was very touched. I'm just processing why. It's just such an act of kindness, of grace. And also, it's very sweet to me that this person sitting knew that the person entering was a Kohen. That's a piece of awareness of each other. Scott at Minyan always knows people's Hebrew names by heart. I know a few of you by heart, but it's hard. Just to be aware of each other, that's the sense of Arevim Zelazeh. I know where you stand, I know your context, I know your difficulties, I know where you thrive, and I want to connect with you, and I want to help you, and I want to be alert to you, and save your time for something better. Let me take care of this. Let me serve you. And this is less about Ms. Brooks, but about life in general. When we look at that Egla Arufa, the broken-necked heifer, does anyone know what Kriyan Kativ is? I don't think any of you have talked. So some parts in Scripture, in Torah, are written one way, but read another. The Kativ is the way it's written, the Kri is the way you announce it. And most typically you see he and who written with different language. That's a very common one. So in this particular parsha, in the description of we did not spill his blood, what it says is they answer saying our hands did not spill this blood. But the word for spill is written, if I recall correctly, in plural, but written in singular, but pronounced in plural. Just a quirky grammatical thing. It's probably some scribal error that crept into a tradition, but orally we kept it the correct pronunciation. But of course, it's a rich moment for metaphor and for midrash. So Yitzhak Meir Bunim says that we get singular, but read plural, because it's never possible to say we've done everything. We can never say, with both our hands, we did everything. We can only say, with one hand, we did our best. That's life. That's life. We are always part of conversations that we never get to the end of, and always have questions that we never get the answer to. And in a community, we strive together to support each other in grief, in joy, in celebration. I shouldn't have brought this memory to mind, but I think it's Anna's wedding, watching Mindy and Barb Levin dance. I just had this moment that I've never forgotten of that celebration of someone who wasn't kin to them, but who was kin to them, is kin to them, and what it meant to celebrate together and what it means when someone is suddenly very ill and people just don't stop showing up at the hospital room even when the person wishes they would. You know, and don't stop calling, and don't stop doing errands, and don't stop buying chocolate that the person loves. You know, I'm sorry to go this way, I didn't expect this, but one of my mentors said that a hard part of being a rabbi is you fall in love with old people and they die. But we all do. We all love people in this community. You know, I'm just lucky to know more of them. And we've extended our hearts beyond our own family and beyond our own intimate needs just by being here today, just by showing up. That's what this means. That's what Yiddishkeit means. That's why we're here. And food. And food. I couldn't help but be amused. In Rabbi and Religious Services Committee Thursday, we spent maybe a third, maybe a quarter, maybe even half of our meeting discussing what foods we need to set out for the holidays. You know, do we need how many people would come on the first day of Sukkot? Do we need Danish, or do we need how much food, how rich a meal? It was really fun. It was a great use of the committee, and it was also about taking care of each other. You know, what will people need? How late will people be here? Will they be hungry? What can we do to celebrate Sukkot? What can we do to end the difficulty and the challenge and the richness of Yom Kippur? How can we do it together? So what's interesting in this Egla Arufa scene is that it's the elders who come together, like the eldest and wisest and most just and most menschlich of the community. And the Talmud says, you know, it's certain that they're not the ones who killed the guy, right? They just wouldn't do it. So would it enter your mind that they'd be the murderers? No. What they say is, we did not see him and we did not let him go without food or escort. As Rabbi Sachs translates that difficult verse at the end of Birkat HaMazon, I've never seen a person suffer, a righteous person suffer. And Rabbi Sachs translates it as, I've never watched a righteous person suffer. I've never stood idly by. And our sages understand that that's a big danger. That was the attributes of a Stomite, someone from Stom and Amora, that they would watch people suffer, that they would not help. And that is antithetical to who we are. We are here to do the right and the good in God's eyes. And that means communitarianism. It doesn't mean atomistic free market capitalism. It doesn't mean living a hermetic life. It means being linked hand in hand to the people next to you as we put our arms around each other at Havdalah, you know, camp at the Kala. It's about joining together. We do that really well. I was so dumbfounded by the response. I was hoping, I said to Rick, maybe one or two people can come out to visit Miss Brooks. I don't know how many people came. It's probably closer to 6 or 8 already. And not just a 20-minute visit, but some people were there for hours. Some people, Ken bought his clarinet. Other people were singing. Other people brought just their richness, their heart. And that's, again, just one example. So Menachem Mendel Schneerson, kind of want to close out the discussion of this issue and this parasha and my sermon with a story from the last of the Lubavitcher Rebbes. The idea of the Egla Arufa, now recall again, so there's a village here and a village here, and the guy dies somewhere in the middle. You find a dead body, a met mitzvah, somewhere in the middle. So you bring out the elders, they stand over it, they break the heifer's neck and say, this is not our fault. We did what we could. But what he says, Menachem Mendel Schneerson said, the principle of the Egla Arufa is that you're responsible for things that aren't in your domain, that you're responsible for things beyond the border of your property. You're responsible for things where you are not fully in control. You can't say, this is outside of my element. I have no obligation to this. We know this. That's what Tikkun Olam is about. That's what service is about. That's what Avodah is about. You know, we understand ourselves to be somewhat of an insular people and we work to protect ourselves, but we also know very well that there is no survival for the Jewish people without responsibility beyond the Jewish people. We're responsible for Knoxville, for Knox County, for Upper East Tennessee, for the country, for the world, for the environment, for its people, for the poor. These things, people we don't see, people that are outside of our home, people that are beyond our lands, it doesn't matter. Not only Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh, but Kol HaOlam Arevim Zeh LaZeh, the entire world is mutually connected.